You are listening to Rouge, White, and Blue, a proud member of the Canadian Football Podcast Network.
And welcome to the News Lighter CFL podcast. My name's Oz Davis. I'll be a co-host. We've got all three of the co-hosts here tonight. Joining me, as always, is Joe Pritchard in Wisconsin. Joe, how's it going for you, you lousy Winnipeg Blue Bombers fan, you?
I feel a little bit better about this team.
Well, going to Montreal will have that effect on you. Also joining us, as always, but back after a two-week hiatus, is Dr. Rouge. And if you don't mind me saying so, Dr. Rouge from that famous movie Space Jam, what's up, Doc?
It was not a good week for Rouge. These kickers, they're really starting to get on my nerves.
Oh, man.
See, Doc, when I see you on Twitter and I just see that field goals keep being made left and right and left and right. And
no, they're not made left and right. They're made down the middle. They miss left and right.
Sure. but they keep making the field goals. And if for some reason you're listening to the show and don't follow the doctor on Twitter, he loves his Rouges. That's why he's named Dr. Rouge. He gets mad at kickers for actually making field goals. So every once in a while when he gets annoyed with a kicker, after he's made two or three in a row, he'll go, kicker's name, my office, Monday morning.
All caps.
I have to imagine your office was jam-packed on Monday morning with all the
It was not a pretty sight. I mean, I had to read a couple of guys the Riot Act, and I told them, look, that if they continue to make field goals, that the respect meter is going to keep going way down to the point that eventually, you know, it's just not good.
See, I think this is, I think in a way, week two for you, Dr. Rouge, was a bit of karmic payback. Because in mm-hmm. week one, the Toronto-Saskatchewan game started 1-0 and ended the first quarter 1-1. And you came on to Twitter in the second quarter. You missed the finest quarter for Rouges probably you'll see this whole season, and you missed it. You missed it.
True story. We had dear friends over for dinner, and I looked at the calendar, or we made the date before I looked at the calendar, and literally as we were all sitting in the living room, I was secretly sending out texts to people going, hey, can you update me? What's going on? You know, I need to know what's happening. And of course, all of my Twitter friends who know that I love the Rouge are just absolutely giving me the business. Hey, great night to have your friends over, isn't it? You just missed the Rouge. It's like, oh, great, thanks. Just rub it in.
All right.
Richard, they make field goals left and right. They miss them left and right. Jeez.
I told you it's been a rough week.
Right.
Oh, it's so good.
Okay, yeah, making up for that two-week hiatus. This is actually your regular season debut, Dr. Rouge. All right, fantastic. Well,
it is.
I guess in celebration of that, Dr. Rouge went out and did the legwork, can you say that, considering it's all online, and got us a very special guest to talk a little news with us. So before we start with our recaps, news, and picks for next week, we're going to give the mic to Mr. Dave Naylor for about 10 minutes. We'll be back right after this. And we are very happy and very privileged to have joining us today to talk a little news, very little news. He's got about 5-6 minutes to spare us today. The TSN reporter, co-host of the TSN Drive, and Canadian Football Hall of Famer, Dave Naylor. Dave, how you doing, and what's news?
Oh, you know, busy time. Week 3 in the Canadian Football League, and lots going on.
Yes, and week 2 lived up to the reputation of the last few years, which is you better have your backup quarterback ready. Dave, the big story right now, and perhaps for most of the rest of the season, is Ricky Ray. Talk to us about Ricky Ray.
Well, I mean, he suffered a serious neck injury Saturday night, and one that I think that if you want to get a sense of, you know, how scary that was, you only needed to look at the players, the faces of the players that were on the field at that time. And Ricky Ray was released from hospital on Monday night. He has had some feedback from doctors that have suggested to him that he probably should not be playing again this year. And I think that's what he wants to do. Now, to be clear, there have been no formal conversations, you know, sit downs with the Argonauts and Ricky Ray where they say, hey, you know, your season's over. This has been just sort of preliminary feedback from doctors off of some results saying, you know, we think it's your best interest not to play. And I understand that's the direction he's going. However, there are still other results that they're waiting on and other doctors that are involved here. So, you know, I don't want to prematurely say, you know, Ricky Ray has been ruled out for the year because that's not what the Toronto Argonauts are saying. You know, what they're in fact saying is that he has been given some advice from some doctors that he shouldn't play again this year, but there could be information that could come from some of the other tests and results that he's done, which would suggest that he could play this year. And I don't think there's any pressure from the club being put on him to do so. I think they just, you know, until they consider him ruled out for the year, you know, they want to wait until they get all the results, and Ricky Ray has all the results, until they're sure that it's a decision that, you know, everybody is comfortable with. So, but look, would anybody be surprised if Ricky Ray doesn't play again this year and ultimately doesn't ever play again in the Canadian Football League? No, they wouldn't. I mean, at age 38, he was, you know, touch and go to come back for this season. And I think the Argonauts knew there was a chance he wouldn't be healthy for all 18 games. And that's part of why they needed to shore up their backup job as well as get a guy that they thought they could ride into the future, which is, and what they'll begin doing in week number four when they play the Edmonton Eskimos with James Franklin, we anticipate, under center.
So you have James Franklin is likely going to be starting the first time around, but it seemed like the team also liked McLeod Bethel Thompson as well. Do you think there's a chance that they would maybe alternate quarterbacks a little bit early on to see what they're more comfortable with?
I don't think so, and here's why. And I'm just giving, this is my speculation, no, you know, insider information. Mark Trestman is a guy who I think likes to give a high percentage of his practice reps to his starting quarterback. I mean, there are teams in the CFL where, you know, they might split that 50-50. And I know up until recently, you know, the Hamilton Tiger Cats were, you know, 60-40, 50-50 between Jeremiah Mazzoli and Johnny Manziel. But from what I understand about the way Mark Trestman likes to practice, the starter gets a lot of the reps. So I don't see him going that direction. What I could see is them saying, okay, you know, James Franklin is our number two. He's the guy who went into the game when Ricky Ray got hurt. He played pretty well. He's the guy we're prepared to go with. But I think you have to keep in mind that throughout training camp, Trestman kept saying that this was a dead heat. You know, this was neck and neck. And they went into the final preseason game and Bethel Thompson threw a couple of picks and he ended up as the number three. But, you know, I think a lot of us anticipated that James Franklin would go into camp as the definitive number two because of the contract they signed him that certainly reflected that and the value they gave him. But Trestman really held firm to the idea that, hey, this is a race, this is a battle, and we're not naming our number two quarterback before the end of training camp. So what that suggests to me is that James Franklin doesn't have that long a leash, because if he looks like he's not ready or doesn't play well, we know that Mark Trestman has a lot of faith in McLeod Bethel Thompson, who, you know, threw two passes last year, but went into the Grey Cup game as the backup quarterback. I mean, had Ricky Ray been injured against Calgary in the Grey Cup as opposed to week two, you know, the Argonauts Grey Cup hopes would have hinged on a guy who'd thrown two passes all year.
Mm-hmm. Dave, I'm curious about something. To what extent, you know, Pop and Trestman were the two people in place when Anthony Calvillo's career ended on seemingly a fluke play almost.
Right.
Is your sense from, you know, hanging around those guys on sort of a daily basis, and of course, obviously having Calvillo now as an assistant with that team, is there a sense that there's something they learned from that experience that they might carry over to this experience here with Ray?
Well, I think if there's an experience to be learned in Montreal, Mark Trestman didn't really pay the price for it because he was on to the Chicago Bears when they were trying to replace Anthony Calvillo. But I think that the lesson is that, and we've seen this all the time, like when a team has a starting quarterback that they can ride for 10, 12, sometimes 15 years, like the Montreal Alouettes did, you better know, you know, where you're going after that. And if you look at the Alouettes, they had Adrian McPherson as their backup quarterback primarily during Anthony Calvillo's last several years. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if anybody thought of him as, he was a great short yardage quarterback, but I don't know if anybody ever thought of him as kind of the heir to the number one job. And they never really developed and groomed that guy. So, yeah, I think that may have been more of a lesson for the general manager who had to deal with that situation than it was for Mark Trestman, who moved on to the Chicago Bears and didn't really have to deal with the fallout of that situation. And that's why, you remember, look, James Franklin last year, I think the BC Lions would have been interested this winter. I think the Saskatchewan Rough Riders would have been interested this winter. I think the Montreal Alouettes would have been interested this winter. And that's why the Argonauts went out, I think, and made a proactive move to trade for Franklin's rights when there was no guarantee they'd be able to sign him, and then sold him on the idea that, hey, it's probably 1 year that you got to back up Ricky Ray, and he's 38, so you're probably going to see some playtime along the way, and you get an opportunity to work under Mark Trestman, and given his reputation of what he's done for quarterbacks, you know, you may make a longer career out of coming here as a backup than you might if you go, say, to Montreal as a starter. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were able to sell him to that. So, yeah, I think that, you know, they sold it as a win-win, but I think the fact that the Argonauts have a couple of quarterbacks they believe in that are capable of going in and winning games and playing 60 minutes for them, I'm not sure they ever had those guys in Montreal. So, yeah, I do think that there was certainly a lesson learned through that experience.
Okay, Dave, we'll let you go, but let me just ask you one more question before you get out of here. All right, what do you think the expectations are now for the Argos for the rest of the season going forward? Same as before, lower than before? They can still win the East, can't they?
Well, look, they can. And I think the curious thing is, Mark Trestman took an interesting approach this year. They didn't play any of the starters in the preseason. And look, they might be 0-2 anyway, right? Like sometimes we in the media love to play cause and effect. Aha, they did this and it resulted in that, right? If they'd been 2-0, we would have said genius. But I do think that it's at least worth asking the question because I'm not aware of any other teams in any league that do that, right? There's a reason guys play a little bit. And I know there were players from the Toronto Argonauts that didn't want to sit out through the preseason, and didn't agree with the decision, respectfully disagreed with it. I'm not sure Jim Popp was on board with that, but it was the coach's decision. And look, I think that's one thing you can look at it and say, you know, most of the other team starters have played parts of two games or parts of one game. Toronto starters did not. But there's no mistaking. They weren't very good on offense against the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. They weren't very good on either side of the ball against the Calgary Stampeders. And I'm going to say this with the utmost respect to Ricky Ray and the career that he had. Ricky Ray didn't play very well in those games. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, his injury is a fortunate thing at all to the Toronto Argonauts or whatever. But look, there is a time when every guy who's played quarterback hits the wall. And there was some people I know in the CFL who think, based on what they saw of Ricky Ray through 1 3/4 of the season, that he kind of hit that wall. So we'll see what happens with the new quarterback under center. It's very early. You know, Hamilton looks good. Ottawa played very well last week. Montreal is another story, which we could fill a whole interview on the
Let's not. Thank you. As an Owls fan, I'll pass on that.
So, okay. Well, you know, call me back in week 9.
Right.
I think the Argonauts still have very high expectations. I know they thought they had a very good team going into this year. They had a lot of returnees. They added some players that should make them better. But offensively, they've been really weak. So, you know, we'll see what happens. You know, they haven't really got James Wilder Jr. going. They have a good, unit of receivers. They're trying to replace Devere Posey with Brian Timms. That, you know, again, hasn't got that kind of production that they got out of Posey. But I think it's still early, and I think the Argonauts will still be a threat in the East.
Fantastic. Mr. Dave Naylor of TSN, we thank you very much for appearing on the show, especially on such short notice. That's really great of you. Thank you very much.
You got me on the 401 driving back to TSN, and you guys can certainly understand why I'm going back tonight.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You'll be on the road for another couple hours then.
No, I'm kidding. Welcome to Toronto.
All right. Thank you, Dave Naylor.
See you guys.
Okay. Well, I guess that takes care of the Argonauts news. We said it several times at the end of that interview, but again, a big thank you to Mr. Naylor, the Canadian Football Hall of Famer. It's not often we get to talk to Canadian Football Hall of Famers on this podcast. I don't know. You got anything else to add, Joe, Doctor? Should we just go into the games?
I think that makes up for our lunacy at the beginning of the show. So hopefully people stuck around. They got some good information from Dave. He was very gracious with his time, and apparently he's going to be spending a little bit more time tonight talking more about the Argos and Ricky Ray. So glad we were able to slot into his schedule on such short notice.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that to both of you that, you know, when I was watching the game and saw the injury, as I was watching all the things that were being done from a medical standpoint for Ray on the field, my first thought was, you know, it is such a good thing that the level of caution is as high as it is. And my first thought was, it's a concussion, and I'm not saying that concussions are no big deal. That's not my point at all. But my feeling was concussion. You know, he misses probably a couple of weeks. All of this extra stuff is precautionary. And clearly, as we learned that Ray spent a couple of days in the hospital, and then we learned that this was a neck injury, you know, clearly that caution that was taken on the field was not just let's be safe. It was let's do this because it's necessary. And, you know, yeah, sure, all of us as fans want to see Ricky Ray play forever, essentially. But, you know, the most important thing to remember is that a wife and two little girls know that they're going to have their dad healthy. And that's the most important thing, top to bottom.
Well, I mean, first of all, I just wanted to say that the only reason, whenever you see the strap down on the stretcher, that's a neck injury, or at least, very least, a back injury. Right. There's no other reason to do that. Right. But I'll tell you what my first thought was. And let me ask if you guys, if this occurred to you guys, my first thought, why did he come back this season? Why? Why?
Because if you could play this game and play it well, why stop until they take it away from you?
John Elway could have come back for another year. You know, I mean, Peyton Manning might have fooled himself into thinking he could come back for another year, but they didn't, you know? And it's just like, I don't know.
That's, you know, we hear in sports so many times, it's better to leave 1 year early than 1 year late, or trade a guy 1 year early than 1 year late.
Especially in football. In football. I mean, you're talking about how his wife and kids will be happy that he's healthy again. Okay. Dude's going to walk in pain probably for the rest of his life, too.
You know?
And that's often a result of playing football. You've got tens of thousands of guys suing the NFL because every day they wake up in pain. You know? So, you know, that's what gets you in the gut. You know, Elway walked away, and this dude can have a regular job as a GM of a football team now. You know? If he had stayed for like two or three more games, who knows? Who knows? You know, and I mean, that's what really got to me. Obviously, I wish Ricky the best, but, you know, maybe the best is to, like, you know, say that's it now, to be totally honest.
And he might not have a choice at this point. None of the three of us will claim any sort of deep and sincere medical knowledge, but let's assume that one of the things they have to continue to check is the discs in the neck, the stability of his neck, etc. You know, there's a point that a medical doctor or two or three, whomever, could very well turn around and say, look, I don't think it's in your best interest to play ever. Forget next year. I'm talking about, you know, the stability, the discs, the whatever might be going on in there. It's frustrating for fans. Disappointing is maybe a better word. To see somebody with that kind of talent go out on a kind of freak kind of play, much like Anthony Calvillo.
Right.
But, you know, when it's time, it's time. And you know, Dave was right. You know, maybe in retrospect, last year, hoisting the cup would have been the perfect time for Ricky Ray to head off into the sunset.
I don't know. I just couldn't help feel like that. But regardless, all right, let's talk some of the other games real quick. Week two started with kind of let's see, were all games 20 points or more? No, one game was 17 points. So we had a week of 17 points or more games. Not very exciting, but some interesting things we learned this week. How about Ottawa 40, Saskatchewan 17? This was the opening game for Ottawa. And in general, Saskatchewan fans cannot be very happy about this. I guess the big news here is, in terms of going forward, is, of course, Zach Collaros got knocked out of the game. It was announced, I believe, today or yesterday, which was Tuesday, June 26th, that he would be out for 6 weeks. So Saskatchewan is going to the backup as well next week. I guess one takeaway from this game is that the youngest offensive line in the league, the Ottawa Red Blacks line, is pretty good against a pretty decent Riders pass rush. And the other thing I would say is, wow, these Riders are hitting hard. I saw Namon Roosevelt take a couple of hits where he should have been counting his ribs afterwards. Your takeaways from this game, Joe?
Well, we kind of have a better sense of Ottawa right now, because that is the team I could not get a grasp on in the preseason. I seem to have trouble with them anyway.
Yeah.
But we know that they can put up points now. Saskatchewan doesn't exactly have the they have a great defensive line, but if they could be neutralized and get into that secondary, especially when they're playing a wide receiver out of position in the secondary, you can make things work. And Trevor Harris, when he's got time, he's going to make you pay for it. As far as the Riders go, we know the offensive line is an issue. And given that Collaros had to run for his life most of the game and didn't succeed in doing that, Barry Bridgester have to do that too. You can have all the wide receiver talent in the world, even if you do have one playing in the defensive backfield for some reason. And if you don't give the quarterback time to throw the ball to him, well, it's not going to end well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting that you pointed that out, because you get to that second level against Saskatchewan, and all of a sudden, the chance to be home free is there. And I really believe that this is why they had Daron Carter out there in the secondary in this game. Now, they put him against Deontay Spencer for most of the game. Well, for the first three quarters of the game, at least. And sure enough, Daron did turn in a pick six. But Deontay probably got the better of him in general there. Can anything save the Saskatchewan defense, which looks really holy right now, Dr. Rouge?
Yeah, I agree with you. They can put pressure on quarterbacks. We certainly saw that in week one. But as Dave mentioned in that interview, let's also not forget that so many of the Toronto frontline players didn't play at all during the preseason. So that opening game was a little bit like the first game of the preseason for them. And they looked pretty rusty, and they didn't look like they had their timing down right. Joe made a good point. The Ottawa offensive line young and stood up to the task. You know, the thing that I kept wondering as I was watching this game was if Derek Dennis and Travis Bond, granted two high-priced offensive linemen, if they were apparently not good enough to be on this team, then, you know, what does that say for the seven or eight linemen that are on the Saskatchewan roster right now? In terms of Daron Carter each and every week, yeah. Can he clearly play the position? Yes. Is he more valuable to this team as a defensive back than a wide receiver? If the answer is yes, then Oz, you're right. This defense has more holes than we thought it did.
Well, he might be with Brandon Bridge now in the starting position. You know, Bridge is not a huge play guy. You know, he's always been, since the Montreal days when we pigeonholed him in there for a few games, You know, this guy has been the unflashy, serviceable quarterback with some legwork, but does not typically generate the big play. And Daron Carter's a big play guy. And I guess the Riders, who on paper looked so good defensively, really do need him back here. Or maybe Saskatchewan just can't win when they're not at home. What do you think? What do you think, Joe? Legit?
I don't know. I just think they have such a large amount of talent on that team. I just wonder if it's being deployed correctly at this point.
Yeah.
Because the obvious one is Carter, but they also have Sam Hurla at middle linebacker, and I've heard it said in a couple of podcasts this week, but Sam Hurla, if he's your middle linebacker, you got a hole at middle linebacker.
Okay, yeah. All right, how about this one then? Here's a good one for you. Now, as a Rams fan as well, I'm obligated to comment on Trey Mason. Trey Mason got into the game with, let's see, I got it down here, with 11:59 left in the second. And the first thing he did was throw a really sweet blindside block to protect his quarterback. So, I don't know, correct usage of Trey Mason? True.
Hey, if he's keeping the quarterback upright, he's doing more than the offensive line is.
Yeah, I would guess that this week he's going to actually see some action with the ball, because, again, I think there's going to be a lot more running in Saskatchewan this week. All right, final comments on this one, Doctor? You want to wrap it up?
If this is a regular kind of team we're going to see out of Ottawa, wow.
Yeah.
If this was, you know what, they caught Saskatchewan at the right time, let's see. I'm inclined to think that, and again, one game is not enough to necessarily draw any firm conclusions, but this team might be better than a lot of us were given it credit for.
Yeah, Stamps Red Blacks rematch in the Grey Cup. How about that? Right. Okay. You can't tell a lot from one game. I beg to differ, Dr. Rouge. I'd say that you could tell a lot from either one of the first two games the Alouettes played. But I'll tell you what. I can't say that for certainty about game two, folks, because I refused to watch this game. I actually was watching the Hamilton-Edmonton game ahead of this one on replay. Thank you, ESPN Plus. And at some point during the game, you know, there was this crack comment from, I don't know, Suter or Rod Black or one of those guys about how, wow, the Bombers just killed the Alouettes tonight in Montreal. So as an Alouettes fan who is really perturbed, I mean, we haven't quite bottomed out yet, but I can tell that we're about to. Well, I'm using the fan we. No, that's we as in yes, by the way.
O-U-I,
because,
I see.
Because we're talking about the Montreal Alouettes here, so. I did skip this game. And so, I will graciously let my co-host crap all over my Alouettes and praise Joe's Winnipeg Blue Bombers as I pull a John Fraser, much missed, and get myself a beer.
They say
probably a good. I'll just say one thing to get it started.
Go ahead.
They say you want a strevolution. Well, you know. that's the last time you will ever hear me sing, for obvious reasons.
Okay. So wait, you objected more to the "we" comment than the "they haven't bottomed out yet" comment?
No, he said we haven't bottomed out yet. And that was like,
right.
Of course.
Right.
They, oh yeah, they bottomed out.
They have.
This is,
yeah,
13 consecutive losses. And, you know, and it's one thing if they were last year's Red Blacks losing, you know, a whole bunch of games by 1, 2, and 3 points. You begin to say, all right, the law of averages are going to turn around in your favor. I mean, this is a team losing consistently by 9, 12, 18, 20. You know, they're not in games, and they don't have the offensive firepower. That defense darn near has to pitch a shutout in order for Montreal to be in a safe or comfortable place to win a game. They just cannot figure out a solid offense on that team. That's 4 or 5 years in a row now.
Well, put it this way. It looks like they are working with five Canadians on the offensive line in practice today, which means that Xavier Fulton is on the bench, which is one of their better named players as far as the offensive line goes. That offensive line makes Saskatchewan's look good. And then behind that offensive line, that's full of holes at this point, and hopefully they can get it back together so that Oz doesn't have to suffer too much more. But behind an offensive line that isn't doing the job right now is a quarterback in Drew Willey that holds the ball too long with a normally talented offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
That's just a recipe for complete disaster. I would hate to be in Oz's shoes right now because he's got to be hoping that Vernon Adams shows up now and with his mobility can run for his life and make a few plays here and there and maybe get the Alouettes a win this season.
Well, you know, and that's the challenge for, you know, for Montreal and has been the challenge. You know, who is the quarterback, capital T, capital H, capital E, or E? Who is the guy that is going to be the quarterback for this team? And if it is Drew Willey, okay. If it is Matt Schiltz when he gets back from injury, okay. If it is Vernon Adams, okay. But at some point, you know, we saw this under the previous couple of regimes. And, you know, I think because of the experience that Mike Sherman had in the NFL that we're not going to see it with him as well. But there has to be a commitment to one guy for a couple of seasons unless he is an absolute disaster. I mean, nobody likes to see the struggles that that team is undergoing at this point. And again, especially in a small number, a league with a small number of teams, when one team is really bad, you can't hide it, so to speak. It is so tough watching that team play. It's such a proud franchise, you know, despite, again, I know there were some problems in terms of you know, gap years and that sort of thing, but such a proud franchise, and to see it being, you know, the mess that it's in, it benefits nobody from that city, you know, across the league, fan bases, etc. It's just not a good situation.
I know that they're going back through their history this year with the different helmet logos across the season. I've loved the idea as a fan, but if they wanted to be more accurate this season, they should have not used any of the Alouettes logos. They should have just slapped the Montreal Concords logo on there and just been done with it. Because this team just, there's just nothing there. There's no hope there. And that scares me a little bit, to be honest.
I agree. You know, and the thing too that frustrates you as a fan is, you know, they had a good quarter and a half to open the season against BC, and then they just sort of faded. And then last week, again, there was effort, there was commitment, but there just isn't, you know, it's just not connecting. They get from the 20 to the 40, and then there's a couple of great plays, and then it falls apart. You know, and I think it was especially evident on the other side of the field last week, recognizing that, you know, here's a guy in his second start who was a college student 3-4 months ago, and here's Shreveler making consistent play after consistent play. Yeah, he's not an elite quarterback yet. Let's not kid ourselves. But for a guy who has never played in the Canadian Football League before, to see that consistency being, and again, with a better team around him, I accept that. But to be able to move a team down the field like he was in week one and in week two, you know, if you're an Owls fan, you're looking across the field going, what in the world? How can we not have this even for 7, 8, 9 weeks?
I think we've done enough piling on. How's the beverage going?
Oh, it's great. It's great. Hey, Joe, I'm glad you brought up the thing with the helmets. Do you suppose that they're going to do the Stallions? Are they going to wear the Stallions helmets at some point?
No, I don't think they're getting that
they
far.
Really should.
I believe the last one they're going to do is the one that they've worn in the last 20 years. But they're going to pretend that the Concords and the Stallions did not exist. Because the Concords weren't exactly a proud part of their history. And the Stallions, they don't really acknowledge as theirs to begin with.
Well, the Concords,
chances are
The Concord's had a neat
logo. Chances
are, too, if
they did the Stallions, Trump would put tariffs on them if they tried to use the U.S. team.
That'd be great. Then they'll have to be the Montreal CFL Stallions.
There you go.
Right. No, this is just, I don't know. You know, as a Montreal guy, you have to just say it's le process. You have to believe in the Ken Austin plan. You know, I'm in the cult of Kent Austin coming to Montreal. I like this proposal by Joe at the beginning of the season. So mm-hmm. I'm just hanging with that. I remember the Sixers 2 years ago. This is le process. We'll get past it. How do you like your Bombers though, Joe?
I feel a heck of a lot better than I did a couple weeks ago. If Nichols goes down again at some point this season, it's still not going to be great. I still want him back there. I still want him to be the guy. But at the same time now, if I do see that telltale sign that Nichols is in some pain, working on him on the bench, what have you, I'm not going to panic. It's been proven that the panic that I had early the last couple weeks or a couple weeks ago was for absolutely nothing. For once, as a Bomber fan. So, well, let's go.
Winnipeg at least showed that they can beat the teams that they're supposed to. And in the first week, they showed that they can at least play ball with the teams that they're supposed to with Mr. Shreveler, mm-hmm. with Mr. Shreveler there at the helm. Your takeaway from the Bombers, Doctor?
I think that there is there's a quiet confidence that I see as I watch that team. Sure, they got the first uh-oh of any of the CFL teams, not yep. only with the Nichols injury, but also with Darian Durant ditching them. Mm-hmm. And who knew? I mean, again, that's turning out to be just an absolute golden decision. For the Bombers and nobody thought of it being that way at the time. I am quietly optimistic that this team might be good enough to really, 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 if we assume Edmonton and Calgary are still the two best teams in the West, they might be, they might not be, but let's just assume they are. If they are, I think Winnipeg as a really close number three is not an exaggeration.
Yep, they could be. This has been a long time coming. Right, let's go to the next game, which is Hamilton 38, Edmonton 21. Now, this was a 17-point game, but it wasn't even that close. Hamilton really showed the way to dispose of a Mike Riley Eskimos team, which is to get the early lead, put the foot on the throat, and just do not let up. That's the only way to beat this team, it seems like, these past few years, especially get the early lead and hold it. That's a big one I find when playing these Edmonton teams. For me, here's my hot take. It's not hot anymore, but I wrote it down immediately after the game, so it was hot then. For me, this is the Hamilton team I was expecting from the beginning of the season, but in not quite the same form as you would expect, right? I mean, who expected Mazzoli to be running the ball 9 times every time for like significant yardage? I mean, you know, this was a new trick out of the bag. Some of the routes the receivers were running were quite interesting and not really something I had seen before. So kudos to the Tiger Cats, who look for real going into their home opener next week. What was your takeaway, Doctor?
I was impressed and continue to be impressed by the idea that June Jones, having had an entire offseason to really dissect the ins and outs of CFL defenses, seems to be sort of that, you know, crazy guy in the lab who puts together the perfect concoction of something. I think they've got something going there. On the Edmonton side, boy, they are just riddled with injuries, especially on the defensive stuff.
Again, yes.
And let's face it, the injuries on defense, especially J.C. Sherritt missing basically all of last season, probably denied them a better chance. And again, they were in the West Final. I get that. but probably denied them an even better chance of being able to make it to the Grey Cup and perhaps winning that game. You know, I don't think we're really going to get a feel for exactly what this Edmonton team is capable of until they really have that entire roster together. Saying that, I do agree with you. If you're going to beat them, you just keep punching them in the mouth and keep punching them in the mouth. And Hamilton did not let up last week.
Yeah, that was it was nice to see the relentlessness against the Eskimos because, again, yeah, I think you have to do that. You know, it's interesting. This seems to happen in the Eskimos every year. You know, the injury bug will hit them, and then they'll be nice coming into the playoffs. They'll go deep into the playoffs. But because of the injuries in the early to mid-season, that's enough losses to drop them out of that home field advantage and thus make the road to the Grey Cup that much harder. Joe, what did you get out of this game?
Yeah, I mean, the injury situation is so bad. It even tried to claim one our friend over at the Eskimo Empire podcast, Andrew, but he did make it to the game. He got to his seat. He overcame the offseason injury. So I just want to say that we're still thinking about you. I know you're probably still working through some pain there, but I see you almost every day posting about your walks, just talking about how you're recovering, and it's really good to see you coming along on that. So I'm glad to see that. The injury bug did not take you away from the game, so that's great. As far as Hamilton goes, I was listening to Podski Wee Wee, as I tend to do before our show, because they do come out earlier in the week, and they were making a really good point that June Jones is doing things a little bit differently than you see mm-hmm. in the CFL, mm-hmm. which is he's got a lot of big bodies in, sometimes six offensive linemen. Mm-hmm. The fullback is sometimes a larger body as well, and they're playing Max Protect, giving their receivers some time to get open, make the big plays, and if they're not open, they're giving Mazzulli enough time to get out of there. So Jones, to U.S. fans like us that have followed his career for years and years now, know him as a passing guru as compared to his peers down here, but he seems to be turning the tables a little bit.
Right.
He got the running game involved. He got the big bodies involved.
Mm-hmm.
So he may be finding something that CFL defenses aren't ready for anymore.
Saskatchewan needs his offensive playbook, and they need his backup quarterback. That's what they need right now. Seriously.
Oh, here we go.
What does this all mean for Manziel? That's the question we ask ourselves.
Well, see, it's really tempting to think, okay, we're on the Manziel thing. We are an American podcast. This is our obligation. I've been thinking about the Manziel thing because, man, I mean, somebody must be thinking trade at this point already, but Hamilton, there's no way they can trade this dude. There's no way. If Mazzulli goes down, they're cooked without him. You know?
You look at what happened in Winnipeg. You look at what happened in Saskatchewan. You looked at what happened in Toronto. You could make a case that Matt Schultz might have been the starter in Montreal. He's hurt as well. But at least three clear number one quarterbacks already are on the sideline. Two are going to be out for a significant number of weeks. One of those two, maybe for the entire season, if not a career. There is a better chance of Joe joining the Riders than Johnny Manziel being traded.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing, though. Here's the thing. Jones could trade Manziel for a half dozen players, you know, from the Riders or from a couple of these other teams. You know? I mean, that's the thing, is that he would be awesome trade bait right now, but they can't take the chance.
No way.
Especially if they spent the whole offseason talking about him. June Jones is praising him to the high heavens. The backup quarterback issue, obviously, they just jettisoned Vernon Adams for nothing.
Yeah.
So they really don't have that much depth at the quarterback position anymore. And if you really want to cover the bases on why this is a terrible idea, I don't want to keep going back to the same well, but Josh Smith over at Three Down Nation, the same guy that is one of the co-hosts of Podski Wee Wee, wrote a fantastic piece about it probably a few hours ago. By the time you listen to this podcast, it'll be about a day old, but it covers all the reasons why any talk about Manziel being traded is just ridiculous.
Okay.
Agreed.
All right, hey, I'm a ridiculous guy. What can I say? I play too many sim games. You know?
And you and you also root for the Owls, but we still love
them. Damn, man. Damn, man.
That was low.
You know what?
That was low,
Jeff. You know what? I'm going to take an aside here because that was low. Listen, Mr. Packers fan. Let's talk about who's in the Super Bowl this year. My Rams or your Packers? We'll be talking later this NFL season, Joe. In any case.
Oh, Lord.
Okay, Doc. We'll bring
you back.
I thought
you were going to say like 1990. I thought that would have been enough to,
Come on. That's way too long ago, man. All right. So we talked a bunch about the Ricky Ray issue from the Calgary 41, Toronto Argonauts 7 game. Talked a lot about that already, so we won't belabor the point on this one. However, and Doc, I know you're a big fan of the guy, so I'm going to throw this one at you first. What are you making of the lack of production from Mr. Wilder?
That is troubling for
it
a couple
sure
of reasons.
Is.
It sure really is. You know, for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, there was so much talk in the offseason, I'm not coming back, and then all of a sudden he was, and he's really sort of ingratiating himself into the Toronto community and doing a lot of good things in from that standpoint. But on the field, without that running game, I don't care if it's Ricky Ray, I don't care if it's Bethel Thompson, I don't care who the quarterback is. That quarterback is simply not going to be able to have success if you can neutralize James Wilder Jr. I don't think it's his fault. I don't think the offensive line has gelled well at all at this point. So much talk going into this season, so much optimism about, you know, the team could repeat. It could be at minimum get back to the Grey Cup, etc. You know, right now there is no question that, you know, again, the bye week for Toronto, who knew the first of 3 bye weeks was going to come at a perfect time. They got to get the quarterback situation squared away. But more importantly, maybe more importantly, they got to get the offensive line situation squared away. If Wilder isn't running, you know, forget it. This team is going to finish 3rd in the East and is probably not going to make the playoffs if that happens.
Yeah. Thanks to that line, Alex Singleton made him look bad all over the field in this game. I mean, on the first 3 plays, with Singleton involved in all 3, let's see, Wilder dropped a pass and gained -1 yards. So, you know, I mean, Singleton just crushed him. You cannot give him that kind of protection with a dude like Singleton out there. All right, Joe, how good is this Calgary team?
Probably about as good as they have been. Mm-hmm. They don't seem to be missing a thing without McDaniel or Hughes at this point.
All right, great. Well, that'll put a bow on week 2. As always, we are looking forward, never looking back. So we'll be back after this with our picks for week 3. Let's talk week 3. Game number 1. Ottawa Redblacks are 7.5-point underdogs at Calgary. Alright, I guess I'll start it up. I just wanted, my first thought upon seeing this game on the schedule was, wow, this is becoming quite the interesting rivalry in the CFL. The Redblacks and the Stampeders. I'll just ask it straight up the top. Does anybody want to take a tie in this game?
No, in Ottawa. In Ottawa,
right, okay, fair enough. So this will be overtime. So I suppose I'll take Calgary in overtime. But that means that Ottawa is going to cover that 7.5. So, all right, I'll take Calgary in a close one. All right, Joe.
I think we're on the same page here. My gut is telling me that I was going to make this a heck of a game. I just cannot get away from the fact that Calgary hardly ever loses in the regular season. So picking against them makes no sense mathematically. So I'm going to take Calgary, but I would not be surprised to see the other thing happen.
Wow, you wouldn't be surprised to see Ottawa win. Okay, all right. Doc, where are you on this?
The only thing that gives me hesitancy in saying that go with Calgary in this game is Ottawa comes into this game with a full week rest, and Calgary will only have come into this game with four days rest. Playing at home, does that neutralize it? Probably. Is it early enough in the season where that might not matter? Probably. But I agree with both of you. I think Calgary wins, but I don't think Calgary wins by a lot of things.
Also, I'm not sure that hesitancy is a word. Is it? Right. Hamilton. Hamilton.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. Winnipeg is 4.5-point underdogs at Hamilton. All right, Joe, I'm going to go to you first. This is the Tiger Cats home opener, we should say. Go ahead, Joe. What do you think?
I believe in this blue team.
Wow.
I think the Bombers are going to win this one. It's going to be another great game. I could see Hamilton winning this one as well, because they are a very good team as well. This is the two great games to start off this week, slate, my opinion. But I just feel like the Bombers have a little bit of momentum behind them now, knowing that they're not, they don't have quarterback troubles at this point. They know what they have now. They know that they can move forward. And Tim Hortons Field is no longer a scary place to play for other teams.
No, it hasn't been for a long time. Wow, nice confidence there from the Bombers quarter. All right, Doc, what do you think on this one?
This was my initial, before Matt Nichols got hurt, Grey Cup prediction, Winnipeg and Hamilton. And I got laughed at a lot, which I often do, but that's another story altogether. I like the home team in this one. Sorry to say that, Joe. I like the home team in this one. I think Hamilton is starting to show that thing that says you can't quite put your finger on it, but you look and you say, ooh, this team might be really, really good. I remember, Oz, you saying that, maybe 2-3 weeks back, you thought this team was capable of maybe 12-6, 13-5, and I thought, that may be a little optimistic, and it still might be, but I like what's happening in Hamilton right now. I think they get the...
Well, I was ready to go 15-3 there in week one. But after week one, I wasn't so high on that. However, I'm going to take Hamilton here. I mean, this is the home opener. I mean, yeah, they're not unbeatable at home. But we'll give them the plus there. When we were talking about the quarterback situation in Winnipeg, and actually, Doctor, you were not on that show, but Joe and I were discussing the possibilities, and I said, you know, they could come out of this 3-3 or even 4-2, but I always had the Bombers losing this game. So I think I'm going to stick with that one. Hamilton put on a heck of a show last week. I don't think they're going to let the home fans down. The only thing that causes hesitancy on my part is
that, hesitancy a word?
See, I'm not sure that it is. I don't think so. The only thing that gives me pause about this game and makes it really difficult is this. Both meetings of these teams last season took place within like the first 7 weeks of the season when the Tiger Cats were a god-awful mess. I mean, they looked worse almost than the Alouettes of 2018 look right now. So we really can't glean anything from that. So I'll just go with the home team. I'll be a wuss and go with the home team here. All right, here we have BC Lions. 6.5-point underdogs at Edmonton.
Edmonton bounces back. I'm still not sold yet on BC having its offensive line straightened out. I'm still not sold on that defense having all the pieces together. I know we talked a few minutes ago about Edmonton being as beat up as it possibly is, but I don't think that team's going to lose consecutive games at home. I'll go with the Esks in this one.
I'll go second on this one just to make things interesting for Joe. I'm not going to take all four home teams to win. I like BC early in seasons these past few years. I'll say BC wins outright. I definitely think they're going to cover the 6.5.
Wow.
But I'll take the Lions. What the hell? Joe?
Yeah, I'm with the doctor. He talked about Hamilton having the it factor. I just don't see an it factor in BC. I mean, they beat Montreal in week one, 22-10. And then the next week, a team with their backup quarterback, but a much better team, I should say, beat them 56-10. So, yeah, I'm not feeling too confident about BC, especially going into Edmonton, where there may be a little bit of ill will between some in the BC quarter toward Edmonton, because a lot of them are former Eskimos at this point. But yeah. I just don't see that overcoming the fact that Edmonton's just more talented.
Wow, even the bye week, even the injuries?
No.
No pause? No. Okay.
No. Nope.
Okay. Alrighty. Alright.
This game, by the way, this is the first Wally Buono goodbye tour game.
Right.
First one.
That's my only argument here for BC, is that, look, the thing that we've been touting about the Lions since the preseason, you know, unless you're completely high on Jennings, in which case you might be high, is the sideline, right? The coaching and the front office. That's what we think is great about BC. Now, give them the bye week, give them, you know, a couple of weeks to study on the other teams. This is the opportunity for them to take advantage of their strong suit. So that would be my argument for BC. Since we belabored the point on that one, we can make this one real short. Alouettes, 10-point underdogs at Saskatchewan, only because they don't want to make it like 18. The over-under on this game is 45.5, so the bookmakers are figuring the final score on this one is going to be 28-18, which is ridiculous. I think Daron Carter is going to get to choose how to torment his former team, which didn't take him very seriously a lot of the time. So I think, you know, surprise, surprise, I think this is a blowout. Saskatchewan wins big. You
guys, I think the only drama left in Montreal season is to see what is the worst odds they get all year.
Oh, you mean
are we gonna see a college football line where we got like a +30 or something?
What week do they go to Calgary? I mean, that could be the one.
Oh man.
For some reason they seem to play Calgary tough no matter what.
Yeah.
So.
That's the thing. They've recorded in the last 3 years, they've recorded two notable upsets. Well, actually, mm-hmm. No, only one, because one of them was in trash week 18. So, but yeah, no, they actually scored an upset over them, and I believe that they're 2-4 against Calgary. So, relative to the rest of the teams in the league, Montreal plays Calgary pretty well. Right. All right. Well, that's wrapping it up for next week's games. Let's wrap up the show. Joe, give us some words of wisdom. Last words.
Words of wisdom.
Go Bombers?
Yeah, I'm not feeling very smart this week. I got my little guy's teething and he's sick, so sleep has been in a premium, so I think I'm going to go to bed. Good night, guys.
Good night. Doctor, what do you got to say for yourself to close
More rouges.
Ah, okay, very good. See, that's in the spirit of things. Right, so the Rouge, White, and Blue is signing off for this week. I'm Oz Davis for my co-host Dr. Rouge and Joe Pritchard. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy the games.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.
All right.